If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and today we're talking about my mixing session routines from start to finish. Like, how do I go about mixing? Like, how do I start a mix? How do I end a mix? And everything in between. All right, so today we're going to talk about that. Maybe this is something that you need to figure out yourself. I will start by saying that this is my way of doing things, how I process things. So the important takeaway from this episode is not doing exactly what I do, but approaching it the same way that I approach it. Consciously making the effort to be organized, to have routine, especially in this industry, because statistically, if you read any sort of personality stuff like the Big Five, right? Big Five personality traits. Anybody that is high to openness or very creative, there's an inverse correlation to conscientiousness, organization, logic, right? It's insane. And a lot of people that are highly creative work in our industry, very neurotic, very unorganized. That's normal, right? If you are highly organized and if you have any form of self-awareness and mental stability, then you will stand out crazy. And if you have that alongside, if you are high in conscientiousness and open to new experiences, then you are a unicorn and you will do really, really well. Okay, so let's get into this episode. Routine matters because this is how you get consistent. And consistency is what separates the hobbyists from the pros. I will say that right now. Clients aren't just paying for a great mix. They're paying for a great mix every time. And, you know, there is something to be said about not every single mix that you do is a hit, is going to be your best mix ever. But that's what they're paying for. That's true, right? So you want to do your very best to, you know, step into the batter's box ready every single time. Even if you don't hit a home run, you're ready to hit one. You want to hit one. Okay. All right. So number one, before I open the DAW, here's a couple of things that I do. I don't know what it is. This is just my illusion of control that I've accepted. I work from home. I just step into the next room. I used to work my entire career up until a few years ago has always been in outside professional high-end studios. This is the first time in the last 3 years I've moved from studios to home, right? And the big difference is that I can just come in here without brushing my teeth, wearing pajamas, having messy hair, you know, whatever it is. And I do that sometimes. But there is a difference when I come in having brushed my teeth. I'm wearing normal clothes. I've changed. Everything is taken care of. For me, the big one thing that I cannot do is we're a no-shoes household, you know, Asian household here. I have to wear socks. I cannot work. I cannot feel serious about my work unless I'm wearing socks. I don't know what it is. It's very dumb. That's just my thing. Okay, so let's see. That's the first thing. Even as far as like aesthetics of the room, you know, is the AC on? Is it working? I like to have the windows open in the morning when the sun isn't glaring directly into my face. Is the room clean? Cleanliness is super important. I don't care how much you think you're able to work better in a dirty environment. Clean up your room once and you know that you're wrong. Clean up your room. Build aesthetics in a way that is conducive to creative workflow, good energy. And that does not mean dirty and busy. It does not necessarily mean gamer RGB lights, right? That's not what it is. By the way, no hate on anybody that has anything like this, but I will say I'm at an age and point in my life that like RGB lights in a room is not conducive to a healthy creative environment for me. It also just feels kind of cheap. Take that as you will. All right. Which is crazy because they're expensive. That's like a crazy thing to say. It just feels young and adolescent. All right. It doesn't feel high-end, bougie, right? Okay, here we go. My bad on that. That was just a personal opinion. I don't care. I stick to it. I agree with myself. Okay, so now we're stepping up. We pull up the session. The first thing that I do when I pull up a session is I open it up and I listen to the rough mix. I do not mix anything if I do not have the rough mix. If they refuse to send me a rough mix and they're like fighting me on it, I get the tracks, the track outs or the stems or whatever they give me, and I just do a bounce right then and there with everything summed the way it is, even if it's cliffing my mix bus, whatever, a little bit, unless it's too much. If it's too much and it's like destroying the mix, I won't do it. But I mean, like I'm just going to bounce right there, call it rough, whatever. But that's like an exception. I refuse, even if it's like, it's the same thing, just bounce it and that's the rough mix. Like, okay, then send it to me. Because the reason my thought process in that is I'm not trying to match their rough necessarily. I'm trying to start off from their rough mix and then go beyond that. Also, you don't send out, and no artist, producer, manager sends out a song for mixing unless they were getting some sort of vibe in the studio, in the production phase. In the production phase, they're dancing to the song. They're like, yeah, this feels good. This feels awesome. And then they send it out to mixing. Even if it is completely horribly mixed, someone was dancing, someone approved this, someone was vibing to the way that it sounds right now. And you need to, this is like detective work here. Like, how do you deduce what someone wants from your mix? And one of the biggest clues is the rough mix. There's a lot that you can get, take it. A lot that you could deduce from the rough mix. Is this a bass heavy song? Is this a horns heavy song? How do they want the vocals? Is the hi-hat freaking loud? What is this? What are the other genres that this is related to? Is it like messy on purpose? Is that the intention? Right, so get the rough mix. Number two, just listen to that rough mix. I like to listen while I'm organizing my session, and I have a new way of organizing my session as of last month. I got a Stream Deck. I'm not using SoundFlow and paying a subscription. I've worked around SoundFlow. I use something called Keyboard Maestro, and I have buttons where in a single click, it'll color code. It'll change the output of a track to whatever button I pushed. It'll color code that track to whatever button I push, and it'll move it into the routing folder in Pro Tools to whatever button I push, all within a single button click. So that just makes organizing super easy, right? So I do all of that while listening to the rough mix. If I'm being super serious, I might also have a notebook. I always have a notebook and a writing utensil next to me. I'm taking various different notes, not just for music, it's for work too. Like if I'm in a meeting, I take notes or whatever. That's just how I operate. But if I'm listening to a rough mix, sometimes I'll be like, ooh, right here, if I'm feeling inspired in the moment and I don't want to forget it, I will write down, okay, at 2 minutes and 55 seconds, there's a chorus drop and I need it to get louder than it is. It felt like they were trying to make this a big moment, but it wasn't a big moment because they didn't automate it enough. Like I'll make notes like that in the first listen of the rough. And the first listen of the rough is really important because that's like where a lot of the inspiration takes place. Like, what do you want to do? How do you go about doing it? What is the direction that you want to take it in? What is the direction that it wants to go in, right? There's a lot of things that you can pull out from the first listen, ideas and inspiration that you can get from the first listen of the song. Okay, and organizing your session. Everybody has different ways of doing this. I use Pro Tools. I have routing folders. I bust things based on the way I'm going to bounce stems. So for example, like I have bass. These are all different buses that I have. Bass, drums, perks, synths, keys, guitars, strings, horns, SFX, and miscellaneous instrumental bus. I can add more buses as needed, but those are the baseline ones in my template and that I have in my Stream Deck. And those route to an instrumental bus, which routes to a mix bus, which goes to my master fader. Okay, for vocals, lead vocals, dubs, harms, ad-libs, group vox, group vocals, and miscellaneous background vocals. Again, I can add different ones if I want, but those are the main ones, and those are bused to an all vocals bus, which goes to the mix bus, which goes to the master fader. That's just how I organize things. When I bounce stems, I highlight those tracks and I bounce those. Sweet. So I just basically the way that I mix is based on how I'm going to bounce stems. It's a combination of both creative as well as practical. Usually gain staging is not an issue at my level, but sometimes I get sessions where some Logic user bounced everything with normalization on and ruins the entire rough mix. And so now everything is clipping when it's summed and it sucks. So I just got to make sure that that's not the case. I start with mixing my bass first, and I look at, that's the one time I actually try to look at my meter, like sincerely, like as part of my routine, is when I mix the bass, which is the first thing that I mix. I make sure that the output of that fader is like minus 18 to minus 15. I don't recommend looking at meters like that always, but that's just, if I do it that way, then I know that I'll be good for the rest of the mix. Nothing will be clipping unintentionally for the rest of the mix if I just start off that way. That's how it is. And then I turn up my monitors to make it the same comfortable monitoring loudness that I do every single time, which is not based on any single meter or number. It's just based on feel, right? Just from doing it repetition. Okay. And then just color coding things, renaming things, moving things into buses and folders, doing all that before you start is great. This is the way that Leslie Brathwaite taught me how to do it, one of my mentors. I mute, the way that I start then is I mute everything and I slowly unmute everything one at a time. So I do instrumental first. I know a lot of people that do vocals first, and that's reasonable. I start with instrumental first. And the one slightly different thing is that I always start with bass. A lot of people start with drums. I start with bass and then immediately go into drums after that. So I unmute my bass. I go one at a time. If there's like a folder of five bass stems or bass tracks, I'll unmute one, and then I'll unmute the next one. I'll unmute the third one, the fourth one, the fifth one, and I'll mix all of those individually, and then I'll do the bus, and then I'll start to unmute the drums, right? And I usually start with kicks, snare, toms, hats, cymbals, overheads, rooms, et cetera. So go in that order, unmute them all at once, fixing phase for drums, et cetera. Okay, so we're just going one at a time. That's how I do it. And then once I do all the instrumental, then I'll kind of try some stuff on the instrumental bus. And then I'll turn down the instrumental bus quite a bit to like minus 10, minus 15 dBs. So I can still hear it. So I know what key that the song is in, like musically, like what the harmonic bed, but that I can mix the vocals basically in solo otherwise, because I want the vocals to sound good. That's when I start on the vocals, right, et cetera. Okay, let's see here. I do a healthy combination of like soloing and mixing in context. I would say that you shouldn't only mix in context, although that's a lot better than only mixing in solo. You should do both. And if you're doing too much of one, try to incorporate a little bit of the other. In general, the thing that does not, great advice that I've heard, and this is just general philosophy. If something feels unnatural to you, it might be a good idea to consider trying to do that more often, or at least considering that perspective more often, right? Okay, plugins and chains. I don't have a specific chains or presets. I do use presets sometimes as a starting bait within the plugin. So it's like, let's say I want to use Soothe. The new Soothe 3 came out. They have great presets, and I pull up a preset and then I adjust from there. So I know I'm going to use Soothe because I have this problem in this area. So I either do a preset to focus on the area or this thing, and I adjust it to taste. That I do sometimes. Otherwise, I don't use preset. I don't have a go-to plugin. I don't have a go-to chain. And I definitely don't have anything like preloaded. Be like, all right, in my template, there is nothing preloaded. It's not like a 1073 into an 1176 into a... There's nothing like that. All of my plugins are completely... on a practical basis only. So I think the only plugins that I have in my template before I even start is like some generic ass Valhalla reverb in Verb 1 and a shorter room reverb, generic room reverb on Verb 2. And I think that's like it. And I'll adjust those when I get into the mix as well. But that's just like so I can just start throwing verbs on things that need it immediately for the sake of vibe. I might do that. But other than that, like other than my effects, I don't have any plugins on anything. I know a lot of people that I respect that do a good job that have plugins on their presets. But even the ones that have plugins on their templates and have preset plugins on their templates, they are added and then adjusted later. Okay. Okay, so I'm not married to specific plugins. I'm married to specific outcomes. And the tools serve my intentions, and I get paid for my intentions. I do have a digital sticky note that Mac offers, like the Stickies app. Of all the plugins that I haven't been using recently or that I just downloaded and want to start using, like a list. I have like 30 plugins right now of like things that... Because I'll get in, like, as any normal human goes, like, I'll get into the habit of using the same 10, 20 plugins. And in order to, for me to not get creatively stuck to kind of like, you know, mix things up and experiment and try new things and figure out if there's ways that I can improve my mixing, I have a list of plugins that I always like try to remind myself to use that don't come naturally to me, right? Outside of my 20, 30 that I are pretty automatic to me. So I always have a list of plugins that I want to use that I haven't been using recently. Okay, cool. Let's see here. Overprocessing can hurt you. Be careful of that. The skill of understanding and becoming aware when you're starting to overprocess is important. That's a more important skill. Okay, reference tracks. Reference a lot, especially in the early years of careers. Like, I genuinely think, I know a lot of like more experienced engineers have talked crap on reference tracks. I'm going to die on this hill. If you are a beginner, even to an intermediate engineer, and even if you're advanced, it is not shameful. It is not bad to use reference tracks. The way that you use them, though, you're not trying to copy that mix. You're trying to see that if your own mix is within the ballpark of the other mix. If you played your mix and then you played the reference mix, is your mix way brighter and thus distracting from the other mix? Does it sound cheaper than the other mix, right? Is the amount of low end that you have, like is the balance that you have, is the loudness that you have at least competitive within the same ballpark as your reference track? That's how you want to use it, not as a way of like, and maybe sometimes I'd be like, I like how the vocals sound in this, so I'm going to then have like a specific reference where it's just like, okay, I'm going to try to, are my vocals sounding like this? No. Okay, I'm going to try to add a little bit more low end so it matches the vocals of this song that I think worked really well, that I think is going to work well for this song. But you still need to determine even if you get it exactly right, okay, my vocals now sound exactly like this reference, does it fit my song? And the answer might be no. And that's okay. But use reference tracks 100%. Like, especially at the intermediate, I have a weird position of having done feedback on a lot of people's music from a lot of different engineers. I used to do feedback live on like Twitch and YouTube and stuff. And so from that, and like as well as like interns, volunteers, I've been in a situation where I've given lots of feedback to people. The number one thing, easily, always, 100% of the time, is, did you use a reference track? No, it sounds like it because you got way too much low end. Your top end is so bright that it is now distracting everything from everything else. Like, there's no way that you were listening to a reference track because you would have noticed that this is too bright. This is way too bright. This is not listenable, right? So just having... stepping away and referencing. Okay. Number six, the step away moment. Every session has a point where your ears lie to you. Yeah, just step away. Austin Seltzer from Think Less Mix at Think Less Mix has great advice. Even when clients say they are in a rush, try to wait till the next morning. Like, don't send out mixes. This is something that has hurt me from not doing this, is I get cocky. And I'll be like, oh, this mix sounds good. I'll send it off the next day. I listen to it and be like, oh, I shouldn't have sent it off. I do that. I did that often. So nowadays I try to wait till the next day, get another pass before I even, so I send my client's mix to. That's the first mix. Their V1 that they see is my mix too. That's the one that they see. Unless I come back and be like, yo, no, mix one is perfect. but there's almost always something that I want to tweak on a new listen. And that might be a few hours later after I go on a run, go practice baseball with my son, you know, eat some dinner, eat some lunch or whatever, play some games for a little bit, come back. But the next morning is a great time. It's like the best refresh. So there's something about sleeping and then coming to it completely fresh at least one day that gives me better insight than just a 30 minute break or an hour long break. And the thing about your limit on that is that there is a part of you that knows when you're being biased, and then there's also a part of you that doesn't know. So just be aware that it happens to even the best of us always throughout the rest of your career. That is a normal thing. And it's about how the professionalism is about how you deal with that, not about not having that. Okay. Number seven. Okay. Delivery and final check. This is important. I'll tell you exactly how I do it. So I use a cloud service called FilePass. There's a lot of other cloud services like Samply and Highnote and others, Dropbox, et cetera. Just don't use Google. Never, ever use Google Drive, ever. If you use Google Drive, shame on you and your family, shame on your cow, shame on your... Okay. Okay, so what your export delivery checklist looks like. Okay, you should, every time you export, so here's how, okay, so sorry, forgive me, I lost my train of thought. So when I'm ready to bounce, I bounce the stereo mix and I put it on FilePass. Once it uploads and processes, if you click on it, it'll show you a waveform. Now there are times, this is how I check to see if there's a misprint, is once I upload it to FilePass, at the bare minimum, if I don't listen back and pull up the file itself and listen to the file, in preview mode on Mac, I will open up FilePass and I will look to see if the waveform is there. Because sometimes my export options, my export from this output is wrong because something in Pro Tools glitched or I used a different interface, something, whatever it is. And it will do a misbounce and it'll be just an empty wave file. If that happens, and it does happen sometimes, I'll just make sure that when I upload to FilePass, I click on the link and it shows me the waveform. I know that there is audio on there. I might listen through it at once just to make sure that, and you can see by the size of the waveform, okay, my limiter was on. Because there's also been times where I bounced everything and I left the limiter on Unity to hear what the limiter sounds like Unity level, instead of like at the ceiling that it's meant to have. And like I'll bounce that and I forgot that I didn't turn up the limiter or like turn that off. The Unity monitoring, some limiters have this, L2 has this, AL from Natural Audio has this. So anyway, this is something to consider. Like I check the waveform. If it looks good, then that's enough for me usually, almost always. Same thing with the stems. I bounce the stems. I take a look at a couple of the stems to make sure that they have some information on them. Okay, how you communicate? Okay, and then I send a V1. This is the hard thing. When you send a V1, I know it's very nerve-wracking sometimes and you get anxious, and that's normal. And I just want to address that. That's normal. That almost never goes away, no matter how confident you are. And I will say that the best thing to do after you send the text saying the V1 is to not fucking say anything. Do not turn off your phone if you have to. Do not say, oh, wait. Do not give, when you send it, do not give any sort of like, I did this, oh, I'm going to do this. Like, don't qualify when you send it, because that just comes off as insecure and they might not hear it. And let them leave that note. If you think on second thought, ooh, I shouldn't have sent this because like, oh, the vocals might be too loud. So you're like trying to be nice and have good customer experience. And so you're like, let me know if the vocals are too loud. Don't say that. If you want to confirm with it after, that's fine, because it's like, hey, I noticed that you didn't leave any notes on vocals. You like the volume of the vocals right now? And they might say yes. They might like that. Doesn't matter. Coming off less confident is more important in this moment in time. Sorry, excuse my burp. Is more important than in this moment in time than to correct any mistakes. I like, this is a secret right here. I'm serious. Because if you come off hesitant or uncomfortable and any sort of qualifiers signals this to the client, right? They can read that. Then they're going to have less trust going into this. They're going to have a struggle approving it. They're going to be like, uh-oh, something's on. And they're going to like be extra critical with your mix. Extra critical. And they're not going to listen to it intentionally. or they're going to listen to it over intentionally or whatever. So shut the fuck up. Don't send anything. Don't send any qualifiers with the mix. Just shut up and wait. I don't care how nerve-wracking it gets. So that's what I'm telling you right now. I'm trying to ease you into it by telling you that it is normal to be nerve-wracking. It is normal to be nervous. That's okay. That's a normal feeling. No matter how much regret you feel, unless it is unless you like did something terrible, like you forgot to bounce it with the limiter or you forgot to bounce it, the drums were muted for some fucking reason. Do not do anything. Like, shut up. Wait for their response. I mean, obviously follow up with them if it's been a few days, et cetera, right? But that's just something to consider. Okay. And feel free to follow up. That's another thing too. Follow up. Continuously follow up. Okay. So in this industry, routine isn't a cage. It's a foundation that frees you to be creative inside of it. Okay. And again, this is routine is the thing that makes people stand out. Routine, consistency is what gets people to stand out in this industry. Talent and skill and creativity is not the high-paying commodity in this industry. It is routine, consistency, reliability. Those are the things that differentiate high-end mixers, high-end artists, producers from the lower-end ones, the ones that never seem to make it no matter how talented they are. I see this all the time. People posting, I'm so sick of so many talented artists that don't get the recognition they deserve. Recognition is not deserved from creativity. It's deserved with creativity combined with reliability. There's a reason why they're not big, and they shouldn't be big or be more recognized. It's because they're not consistent. Like, let's say you get big and you have to go on a tour and you have to do a world tour as an artist, or let's say you're a live sound engineer. Like, that takes a high amount of consistency, routine, maturity, and like high levels of maturity that helps you execute that, right? So no, most people that are highly, extremely talented don't deserve to go on tour, don't deserve to have a best-selling album. There's like, they don't. It's not creativity. It is the other part of it. It's about the conscientiousness. It's about the ability to execute, the ability to follow through, the ability to be consistent, to do things good, excellent every time, not just to do something excellent whenever you feel like it sometimes. Anybody can do that. Literally anybody can be excellent when they feel like it. An ape and a dog can do that. It is about doing it every time, especially when you don't think you can, especially when you're tired, especially when you're anxious, especially when things are not going your way. When you choose to be excellent in those scenarios, that's what differentiates professionals from the amateurs. Okay. That's the end of my rant. So what does your routine look like right now? Where are the gaps? Something to think about. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every session. We, the professional engineers automate so much of the boring stuff, so we can just get down to the real work. Okay, that's it for this episode. If you want more practical tips on how to mix, like compressors, like reverbs, like bussing and all that stuff, mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. If you want ad-free episodes, because I know a couple of people have been bummed with the ads, hey, I got a family that I need to feed, and I dedicate a lot of time to this. You know what? I'm allowed to run some ads and I don't care. But if you do want ad-free ads, you can support me directly by going to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and signing up for a Patreon. It's $4 a month as of right now. The price might be going up, but right now it's $4 a month. I'm locking everybody in who signs up early. And you get access to all the exclusive episodes. I think there's almost 300 now. And you get ad-free episodes every week of the main podcast episodes. Cool? Sounds good? Okay. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today.